Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers. And I have brought along a friend.
Anyone I know, Carolyn?
Well, you might be acquainted with him.
Good evening, everyone. This is Richard. How are you? Hope you are well.
Indeed. And I would say that tonight there must be a lot of people waiting for this call. As you probably are aware, we have, well, Richard in particular, when he does his karmic clearing calls, many times recommends a particular book that is Anna, Grandmother of Jesus by Claire Hartsong. And so we've had a lot of people asking that we bring Anna forth and she be our guest tonight. And we will do that. But before we do, I just want to mention something that what Richard and I do might seem very unusual. And maybe some people don't believe that we really do speak to people on the other side. But I want to take a moment and talk about this for a second. When Earth was created, it was created in such a manner that the consciousness of every being and things that existed, like stones, trees, grass, stars, all have a consciousness, and we are able to communicate with the different consciousness. Though many people, and perhaps most people, don't believe that they can do this. And I suspect that part of this has happened because when we come into this lifetime, we forget a lot of the knowledge that we had during other lifetimes, things that we carried over. And it's very unfortunate because there is so much joy that can be had by exploring the knowledge of the different consciousness that exists here on this planet. And I mention this because it is something that all can remember. And Richard is so very good at this in working with individuals, well, especially on the right brain magic. Richard, would you just take a moment before we speak to Anna and tell people a little bit about the right brain magic sessions that you do and how people can find out more information about it?
I'd be happy to do that, Carolyn. They, to me, are really quite fascinating sessions. Essentially, what we do is walk you through a process to begin to awaken, if you will, your ability to communicate with other forms of consciousness. And actually, there are quite a few that come forth that have begun to awaken these skills, but are a little unsure, not sure what they can trust and what they can't. And so we step through a process working with the consciousness of your physical body and your higher self and beings on the other side and so on. So it kind of opens the door to this process for you. And some of the feedback that I get after those sessions is really quite fascinating. It's quite extraordinary what people seem to be able to awaken within themselves after that work. I had an email from someone just this week from a woman that I worked with in the last week or two, and she says, I've been practicing every day and I've had some wonderful information come through from my mum, my dad, and also my ex-husband regarding my daughter. And so these individuals obviously have crossed over, and she came to trust her ability to connect with them. So it's just fascinating how this unfolds. And if this is of interest to you, you can find more information about this at our website, rightbrainmagic.com, www.rightbrainmagic.com.
Richard, thank you for bringing that forth. I feel that I wanted to mention this because there are some people who doubt that we actually connect to those on the other side. And so what we're going to do now is call forth Anna. And something that we do that I just think is so exciting is that Richard describes what Anna's, you might say, vibrations feel like to him. And there is a good chance that if you place in your third eye an image that you think represents Anna, the grandmother of Jesus, the mother of Mother Mary, and just call her name. Could be internal, don't have to say it out loud, and you listen to Richard, you might have a close connection to Anna yourself. So with that said, Richard, would you be kind enough to call forth Anna?
Yes, she is here. And I would describe her energy as this beautiful, gentle, loving energy. It's a little beguiling in the sense that it is, I experience her energy quite broadly, it's not a focused, intense energy as they often can be, but I experience it quite broadly, and I say beguiling because this breadth belies a sense the power that she carries. There is this great beauty in her energy, a tremendous amount of love, and also wisdom is my sense, and just this beautiful grace is how I would describe her energy. Poise, grace, power, love, clarity. Just a beautiful energy. And as I say, much more, I experience her energy quite broadly, fairly focused, very, very slightly left of center of my chest area. But overall, her energy is very broad, which in a sense reflects the wisdom, perhaps, that she carries. Fascinating energy, beautiful energy.
Thank you, Richard. As soon as you called her forth, I felt this gentleness. And I would just like to mention that perhaps people sense this in other ways besides in the chest area. You seem to do this because there is this heart energy that you have that is very loving, that is very intuitive. And so I would just like to mention to those who listen that people experience in different ways, and they might even feel just an intuitive message. They might even hear something that she is saying to them. You might even see a color. So just be aware that you can experience individuals on the other side in different ways. And so with that being said, Richard, would you be kind enough to bring forth Anna's message to our listeners, please?
I'd be very happy to do that. Let's see what Anna has to say. It is my great pleasure to join all of you on this special radio show tonight, and indeed to connect with all of you who subsequently listen to this recording, because my energy and my words are encoded in this recording. So as you listen to this recording sometime later, if you choose to, then you can experience this energy, this coming forth, and the power that my words might carry for you as much from the recording as you will do so from this live channeling that Richard is doing as he brings forth my energy and my words to you. And I wish to thank both Richard and Carolyn for giving me this opportunity to come forth in this manner. I am aware that Richard has promoted my book to many of you who are listening, because many of you were Essenes, as I was. And indeed, I was very active in the Essene community, as you may understand. For those of you who do not understand the Essenes, they were what you might consider a Hebrew sect that was present in the time of Yeshua, indeed present for several hundred years before Yeshua's time, that tended to live communally and carried threads of many mystical, many metaphysical traditions. We were not just Hebrews, but could trace our origins back to the time of Atlantis. So we understood our origins and we understood our mission, which above all other things was to provide a platform for the coming forth of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene. And this was understood by the Essenes for a long period of time. And so a great deal of work was undertaken by many of us to refine our skills and abilities to be up to the task, you might say, to prepare the way for these two, because in truth it was the mission of both of them, both of whom, you may understand if you have read my book, were my grandchildren. Yes, you understand that I was Mother Mary's mother and hence Yeshua's grandmother, but also Mary Magdalene was the daughter of my son Joseph of Arimathea, and so both of these two were my grandchildren, and indeed they were first cousins, though they did not share the same father, that is, same grandfather. And so, as some of you have understood, the unfolding of that important work in many ways unfolded within my offspring. I do not say this to you to claim anything particularly special about myself in that regard, because I understood it was my mission, my journey to undertake this work, to, you might say, prepare the ground as best as I was able for the coming forth of that important mission, that mission that, as you have understood, if you have listened to these radio shows over time, and also if you have been monitoring Yeshua's newsletter, you will understand that that mission was very much about preparing for your time. And so I was one that worked very hard at mastering the metaphysical, the mystical skills. I was what you might consider an adept. Those of you that have read the book that I gave to Claire Hartsong will understand that I spent many years studying in Egypt and also spent time studying in the Himalayas with some of the great yogis, and also time in Britain in particular, working with the Druids. And so I carried very broad skills. And as Richard mentioned in the email he sent out about tonight's show, I did in truth live for some 840 years, which might seem quite extraordinary to most of you. But you see, the ability for humanity to master the aging process has always been present on the planet. Some of you understand that the aging process has really only been in place since the fall in Atlantis, in part because the decision was made to ensure that an individual lifetime was not too extended, so that if an individual got significantly off track, you might say, the consequences of this were not so great for the individual soul. And so they could, you might say, end that mission, end that journey, and their monad could send forth further particles to continue on with the experiences in human form. And so this aging process has only been in place on the planet for some 13,000 or so years. And there are those, as I say, who have understood how to both prevent the aging process and reverse it. Perhaps the most striking example of this process is the one that some of you know of as Babaji. Babaji has been present upon your planet for over 2,500 years, and some have said that he has left and returned more than once, but indeed this is not the case. He has remained incarnate upon the planet for all of this time, and yet those who see him will find an individual who looks to be about 30 years of age, and he has carried that physical age for most of his life. This is an extraordinary achievement and unique, from what I can understand, in the history of humanity since the fall. Of course, before the fall, people lived for thousands of years if they chose. It was not such a great issue. And so in my lifetime, I aged to about the age of 65, and then in my time in Egypt, I mastered the ability to rejuvenate my physical body, to return it to the age of my choosing, which was about 35 years of age. And more than that, as time progressed, I made modifications to my physical body. Again, those of you who have read my book will understand that I essentially lived underground in the area of Cairo, of the area of the pyramids, in that area that in that time was known as Heliopolis, which is now where the Cairo airport is located. And so I, for the most part, lived underground in that time, and this required some changes to my physical body to be able to operate under those conditions optimally. And then when I chose to return to the surface and return to Mount Carmel, I again modified my physical expression to support living on the surface of the planet once more and to be able to deal with the strong sun and the conditions of that climate. And so this is an ability that in truth all of humanity has, if you but understand how to master these skills and abilities. And I mention this not because I encourage any of you to seek out the process by which I undertook that work, but indeed I mention it because, as most of you on this call will understand, there is a process in your very near future where the physical body will be rejuvenated for all of those that choose it. And I mention my experience because what you will be experiencing is not that strange. It seems strange based on the experience that has existed upon the planet for the last some 13,000 or so years since the last time your planet was in alignment with galactic center. And so really it is a very short period of time on the planet where this aging process has been in place. But of course, from the context of an individual lifetime as you live it today, it seems a long, long time ago. And it seems like the notion that you might be able to live seemingly forever was such a ridiculous concept. But the evidence exists upon your planet, as I say, if only with that individual called Babaji, who is still present. And his story is not just written in my book, but indeed is also documented by that one you know of as Yogananda in his book, an autobiography of a yogi, because he was in what you might call the spiritual lineage of Babaji and was very well aware of his skills and abilities, and indeed documented some of those skills and abilities in his book. And so you are not simply relying on what you might consider the hearsay of the internet for the evidence of this man. And I honor the extraordinary path that Babaji has walked. In comparison, mine was very minor. And you might know that Babaji was a great teacher of many of the Essenes, including Yeshua. And so I wanted to just talk to you a little about some of the things that were in play in my time that, in a sense, flow into yours. I understood relatively early in my life that my mission indeed was to bring forth many of those who would participate in what you might call the crucifixion play, though indeed it involved many other things besides this. Many, as I said, of those who supported Yeshua were my offspring in one sense or another, and so it was a great honor for me to be able to serve humanity in this role. And I will say that I indeed have come forth, or at least more accurately, my monad has sent forth aspects on many occasions to assist humanity in its journey, and in particular to bring forth aspects of both Ellora and Sandalphon, as I did in that lifetime, to support some of their key missions and key work. And so indeed I will mention that in fact there is an aspect of my monad which is incarnate upon your planet in this time and will play a role in the unfolding of all that is about to explode into your awareness as you begin to prepare for the December 2012 solstice and the ascension event in your near future. And so I simply wished to give you these few words of context, and I am very willing to answer any questions you may have of me.
Thank you, Anna. We certainly do appreciate everything that you have said to us because it's so exciting and it just opens the door for more questions. I'm so intrigued by so many things that you have said. And one of the things that you mentioned was that before Atlantis, I want to make sure I've got this correct, before Atlantis, people lived for thousands of years. And I'm intrigued by that because I wasn't aware that there were beings on Earth before the Lemurians and the Atlanteans. Can you tell me a little bit about that history, perhaps who they were, where they came from?
Perhaps you misunderstood my comments. Specifically, what I was referring to was the change at the fall of Atlantis. And my words were, in fact, referring to the Atlanteans and, indeed, the Lemurians, both of whom did not experience the aging process in the way that you do. So, indeed, the Atlanteans could and did live for thousands of years in many cases, and certainly the Lemurians did this. There were civilizations, you might say, expressions of souls on your planet before the Lemurians. However, I do not wish to pursue that area any further. It is my view that the journey which begins, if you will, with the Lemurians is perhaps where the understanding of humanity really needs to begin as you understand the broader picture of what is unfolding. The time will come beyond ascension where some of those even earlier doors can be opened by those who are driven to understand them.
Well, thank you for clarifying that. I wouldn't want to leave with misinformation in my mind. So you mentioned about this time when you lived underground in that Egypt area. Can you give us a little bit of a few of your thoughts as to perhaps why you did this and what it was like?
At that time, there were many great masters, many great beings that lived underground in that area, some great teachers, and they had powerful connections to the pyramids. For example, as you are aware, the King's Chamber in the pyramid that you know of as the Cheops Pyramid, what I would call the Great Pyramid, that indeed that chamber was a chamber for great spiritual work. And it was not simply a matter of the individual entering that chamber. There was a path that that individual needed to pass through underground. And there were many steps along the way that that individual had to pass through. They needed to demonstrate skills and abilities. They needed to demonstrate the mastery that they had already achieved, usually by passing through those earlier temples further upstream on the Nile. And so there was a path underground where the individual needed to pass, and inevitably there were others who were with them who travelled that same path in support of them, and they took up residence in particular locations underneath the pyramid and indeed in other locations in the pyramid, generating particular sounds and acting in support of the one who was occupying the King's Chamber. And so I mention these things so that you have some sense of the work that was being undertaken. I was taught by many great beings. There were expressions still upon the planet of some of the great souls that had been responsible for key preparation of the planet and for earlier preparatory times. For example, I worked with Thoth and his consort underground, underneath that area of Egypt. And this may surprise you that he was still present in that time, because your history books will say that his time was really, you might say, the time before the fall in Atlantis, some 13,000 or so years ago, rather longer. And yet he was still present and was one of my key teachers in that time. There were many great records, many great scrolls kept as records in that area, and I spent a great deal of my time copying, indeed mastering the processes of copying some of these great documents so they could be shared and distributed. And many of the individuals that were working underground there were part of the Essene community that had in some cases been living there for a very long time. And so there are traditions of this nature that are not well understood by many of humanity. Indeed, most of humanity does not understand that there are beings within the planet who play key roles in ensuring that the functions of the planet continue. You might say they have roles in support of Gaia, the consciousness of the planet, if you will. And you might say some of these beings that I worked with indeed interacted with those ones who oversaw this protection and supervision of the planet.
Thank you, Anna. Before we take calls from the audience, I have one more question. And as grandmothers just love their grandchildren, here, you know, people carry wallets around with all the pictures of their grandchildren and children in it. And so I think you are one who would be in a very good place to give us some concept of what Yeshua was like as a child and as he grew up. You know, his disposition, his personality, maybe some thought of his behavior that you particularly enjoyed. Would appreciate that.
Perhaps the most powerful misunderstanding there has been about Yeshua is that he was a very serious-minded individual. This is the image which comes down through the Christian church. And indeed, he could be quite serious and very focused on his particular tasks. However, he was an individual of great humor, and always he was very quick-minded and physically very, very capable. Most of you would not know that he was, in your term, some 6'3" tall, which for that time was most unusual. And of course, he was not that tall when he was a young child, but he grew very quickly. And so he was a very striking individual. He had striking blue eyes, and those of you that have experienced him in the etheric will confirm that when you have experienced those eyes, you will never forget them. And indeed, it was like that when he was present in the flesh. So, as a young child, those eyes were so penetrating. They were so wise and so aware, and yet so devilish and playful. He loved to play games, not only with the children around him, but indeed the adults around him. He would often play games with me as I worked with him, and it was one of the great highlights of the time for me that we spent together was his playfulness and fun and games. Like, he would, for example, tie my shoelaces together when I wasn't watching and then catch me when I stood up to walk. He would run and play with the other children, carry them on his shoulders, and run and hide and play games. He was a very playful child who understood the joy of life, the wonder of the experience of human life. Yes, there were times when his mission weighed him down, where the powers that were beginning to come forth within him had him struggle to master them. It was not an easy path for Yeshua because he was undertaking very intense and powerful training from a young age to be able to fulfill his mission. And so this weighed upon him. But there were times when he would completely set that aside and be this joyful, playful grandchild that was, you might say, the apple of my eye. He was just an extraordinary little boy and young man, and then an extraordinary wise man as he gathered all of the skills and abilities through his learning, and then as he began to tap naturally into the wisdom that poured forth from within.
That's beautiful. And I'm so glad that we had the opportunity to hear about this side of him, because it's not, well, I would say not general knowledge. And one last word before we take a message from our audience. Tell us a little something about the relationship between Mary Magdalene and Yeshua.
Your question causes me to open an element of discussion about my book, which Claire brought forth. I will say that Claire did a very fine job in bringing forth my words. However, even in that book, there were some areas where there were distortions that crept into what I shared with Claire. And this distortive process became almost overwhelming in the sequel to this book. In addition to those distortions, there were also areas of the book which I chose to, you might say, vary the truth a little. And there were very powerful reasons for this. It was my role to bring forth certain aspects of this story, to provide a context, you might say, for Yeshua and Mary Magdalene's mission, and to express the nature of the Essene community and what it was like to be an Essene. And so, in my book, I speak of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene really meeting when they were close to their early teens, whereas in fact they knew each other as very young children. You might say they were soulmates from a very young age. And so they really grew up together. Some of you understand that they in fact were born on exactly the same day. It was a very auspicious day for them to be born, for them to be able to bring forth the skills and abilities that were important for them to express. And so it is no surprise that they were actually born on the same day. And so they were cousins, as you would understand. And even though Yeshua spent some early years in Egypt, they were in very close contact once he returned from Egypt, because Mary Magdalene's mother, Mary of Magdala, was a very important teacher of Yeshua from the very early days. And this is not something brought out in my book for a number of reasons that I do not wish to go into here. And also because this is an area where distortion began to sneak into the book. And so they knew each other from a very young age. And again, quite early, began to understand the connections that they had and the importance of their mission together and their life together. And the flowering of their love was something which just happened naturally as the two of them matured. And really, after some time apart, when Yeshua traveled to England, to Britain, to spend time with the Druids, he left at the age of about 13 and returned at about 16 and a half or so. And so he was, you might say, a very grown-up young man when he returned. And so their relationship, in one sense, began to blossom when they reconnected upon his return. And so they were very close, they were very loving, and they understood the importance of their mission, but also the wonder and joy of the connection that they shared together.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much. We have Elizabeth online, too, that has a question. Elizabeth, welcome. What's your question?
Thank you so much. First of all, I'd like to express my gratitude to you and Richard for bringing this forth for us, I'm getting breathless in the energy of Anna, and it's so beautiful and so loving. And I have read that book, and I just keep it on my nightstand because the vibration that comes from it is so beautiful. The term "the secret heart of God" is often associated with Anna, and I just feel that beautiful, loving vibration from her energy, and wanted to express my gratitude that she's sharing that with us through you. And my question would be, you know, these are very different times than the ones that she lived in. And I also have a lot of gratitude for Babaji because I really feel his devotion in staying on this planet. And he's actually, you know, I feel like he's actually making, you know, contributing to the possibility, you know, keeping that possibility alive for all of us in the process. And so my question would be, there's so much information out there. What is something that Anna would recommend as a practice, you know, as we await the rejuvenation command, that we can do to help bring forth this energy?
Richard, did you hear that question?
I believe so. If I understood it, the question is, what practice would Anna recommend for those as we await the emergence of the rejuvenation command?
Correct. Thank you.
And so let us see what Anna has to say. I thank you for your kind words and your acknowledgement of my contribution. I simply have brought forth my gifts to the best of my ability to assist humanity in preparing for this time. And in terms of preparation, my recommendations would be that you meditate regularly. And by that I mean simply spend some time going within, maybe 20 minutes or 30 minutes per day, and at a time that works for you, when you are able to sustain that time without being disrupted. And just allow to unfold whatever unfolds for you. Spend that time going within. It is like any form of practice, any form of exercise. It will strengthen your connections within. It will help to open your connection to your intuition, to your spiritual side, to your access to wisdom. These things are all important. And also, if you have experienced a soul healing session with Richard, then I encourage you to use the tools that he has given you to clear the negative energies that you have collected in this lifetime. Clearing these energies helps to set you free and to enable you to stand in the truth of yourself, to stand in your own power, to remember the power that you carry, to remember the truth of who and what you are, to remember your love for yourself. These things are above all the most important things to begin to do. The consciousness in which you live has been so manipulated to bring forth fear and doubt and to foster guilt and shame. The consciousness that you are in is intentionally manipulated to disempower humanity. And so those of you who are in some kind of leadership role for what is unfolding, and this is almost everyone who will listen to this recording in the next month, that all of you seek to use these kinds of processes to set yourselves free, to extract yourself from these controlling elements of this consciousness so that you do stand in your power and you reconnect with your love for yourself. These things are above all essential for everyone to understand and to reconnect with. And so you, as leaders, should practice these things to the best of your ability.
Anna, thank you for that lovely answer. And Elizabeth, thank you for bringing your question forth and giving us an opportunity to hear Anna's answer. Thank you, dear. And we'd like to move to Eileen on line 4.
Hi.
Welcome, Eileen. Hi.
Welcome, Carolyn. Hi. Nice to have Anna present with us, and it's been a very, I've been very eager to have her come forth with some answers to some of these questions I have. I want to know if the Essenes were vegetarians, and because of their high regard for Mother Nature and the earth and the water and sunshine and keeping
we're getting
the body
close
clean.
We're getting close to the end of our time, Eileen. So let's
So my question is, if they were practicing vegetarians and if they were also into the essential oils.
Will do. Did you hear, Richard? Vegetarians,
yes, I did.
And essential oils.
There were many groups within the Essene community. And as part of those groups, those different paths, you might say, diet varied quite a bit. You may be aware that within that area, there were two primary communities, those two primary communities being Mount Carmel, where I was located, and Qumran, which is the location where the Dead Sea Scrolls have come forth. And there was an Essene diet which was particularly ascetic, particularly narrow in its nature, which involved a very narrow selection of vegetables and included some insects. It was an unusual diet and not one which I ascribed to or indeed recommended. And for the most part, the Essenes were vegetarian, but it was not something that was a requirement to be an Essene. There were many Essenes who also ate meat. And there is nothing wrong with that choice in any manner whatsoever. And so it was not necessary, it was not essential to be a vegetarian to be an Essene. And in relation to your question about essential oils, we were great masters of essential oils for healing and for embalming and for many other purposes. We understood these. We also collected many wonderful herbs and understood them and their traditions. And indeed, those of us who had the opportunity to travel would often collect herbs from those places we visited, the herbs which were not growing in our local area, and we would take them and dry them and transport them back and use them for our purposes. And so there was a great understanding of essential oils and herbs in our traditions.
Great.
Thank you, Eileen.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, we want to move on. We have exactly 5 minutes, and I don't know if we can get Teresa answer, but Teresa on line 3, if you can quickly give us your question, we'll try and get your answer for you.
Yes, hello. I have reason to believe that I was very close to Anna in that lifetime and during Yeshua's lifetime, and I was wondering if she could comment on that, please.
Okay, that should be Richard. Was Teresa connected with Anna in some fashion during that lifetime?
Teresa was an Essene, and she was part of the Mount Carmel community for a period of her life. And as such, she was well known to me. And also, as with perhaps all of the Essenes on one level or another, had a role in supporting the mission of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene, and so was also well known to those two.
Thank you, Richard and Anna. Well, Teresa, good news. Blessings to you, dear.
What was my name back then?
Would you say?
What was my name back then?
Anna, do you care to share this with Teresa? What was her name then?
I am aware that Richard struggles with names, and this is not a good context in which to seek to bring this forth.
Oh. Thank you very much.
Sorry, Teresa, didn't work with that one. So we would like to thank Anna. We are honored for your appearance here, and honored that Richard has brought forth your information. Thank you to the two of you.
So, have we finished our questions? Sorry, I was distracted.
I noticed.
I was lost.
You were. I was ready to ring that little bell and call you back.
Yeah, it was. It was very deep.
Apparently, I was going to come in there and tap you on the shoulder.
Yeah, probably needed it.
We have 2 minutes, Richard. Would you care to have the last word, so to speak?
I wouldn't imagine I would ever do that, Carolyn.
You do it all the time.
So I think you are we were talking about who we were going to have next week, yes, as I remember?
Indeed.
And
who was that?
I believe it was someone who Anna mentioned, actually, which was Toth.
Yes.
Which should be quite interesting, I should think. Quite a character. Also known in the Greek traditions as Hermes, the same individual.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
I think that'll be quite fascinating. He played a pretty important role in many ways.
Indeed he did.
Some of which are recognized and some not.
Yes, and he, as I understand it, was the author of the Emerald Tablets, which some people read and might have questions about that.
Mm.
And his work with the pyramid.
Yes, I don't think too many people understand his role with the pyramids, so that should be interesting. See if he wants to talk about that.
Well, if he doesn't bring that forth in his message, we'll ask him.
I'm sure you will.
So with that news, my friends, golly, these hours go by so fast, truly do. I want to thank all of you out there for listening and thank Anna in a special way. There were so many other questions I had for Anna. And you, Richard, that does such a magnificent job. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Carolyn, and thank you to Anna for coming forth and sharing her energy and her words with us.
Indeed. So, goodbye for now, until next week. And those who want to question Toth, tune in then.
Thank you, Carolyn. Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.